Welcome to the fourth episode in our CME podcast series on improving the transition process for pediatric IBD patients. During this series, we will highlight challenging cases. The series is sponsored by the Children's Digestive Health and Nutrition Foundation, along with the North American Society for Pediatric Gastroenterology, Hepatology, and Nutrition. A special thank you to CentiCor for providing support. I'm Dr. Tony Otley, Chair of the Program and Associate Professor at the Department of Pediatrics, the IWK Health Center in Halifax, Canada. This podcast focuses on navigating independence. Our faculty today is Dr. Joel Roche, Director of the Pediatric GI and Nutrition Center at the Morristown Memorial Hospital, and Anne Grant, Family Nurse Practitioner in Clinical Transition Programs at the Joint Penn CHOP Center for Digestive, Liver, and Pancreatic Medicine.
Hello and welcome. This is Joel Roche, and we are here with Anne Grant to talk to you today about navigating independence as part of our ongoing CDHNF series on transitioning the inflammatory bowel disease patient. What do we really mean by navigating independence? I think for a lot of us, the time that our patients are moving on either to college or right after college or entering the workforce is a natural time to move from the pediatric care team to adult practitioners. And some of the previous podcasts have gone over some of the medical issues. We'd like to talk about some of the psychosocial and real-life issues of being out in the world with inflammatory bowel disease. Are our patients ready for the obstacles? How can they troubleshoot the different issues that may present themselves as they leave and live and breathe the transition process?
Joel, that's a really interesting topic to me because I do work with transitioning the pediatric patient to the adult side. And a lot of the questions I get asked, and I wonder if you could sort of tell me a little bit about it, is when they go off to college, what kind of things do they need to know and be prepared for if they go to work right after high school or after college? And then some tips maybe on living independently.
Those are all great questions, Anne. I remember as a medical student when I did my adolescent medicine rotation, a little mnemonic that I was taught was sex, drugs, rock and roll, school, and home. So covering those issues, you sort of cover a young adult or adolescent as they move out into the world. So let's think about some of those. When we talk about sex and drugs, we're talking about intimacy issues. Some of our patients have perianal disease. Some of our patients are on steroids and may have altered perceptions of themselves. A lot of issues of moving out into the world. Some of these issues we've probably already begun to talk to our patients. Hopefully we have. Hopefully we haven't just waited until college. But certainly as our patients start to live independently and start looking for soulmates and people to share their lives with, these are issues that if we don't bring up, I'm not sure that our patients are going to be ready to do so. Some of these patients we've known since they were three or four, and for a lot of us, it's almost like having the same discussions with our children. So I think we need to prepare ourselves for those discussions and be comfortable in bringing them up for our patients. As far as drugs, well, that includes alcohol, recreational drugs, and our patients need to understand that they need to feel free to discuss these issues with us and with their next care team as well. We've all seen patients, I think, who've suddenly had elevated liver chemistries after they've gone off to college and we're worried about toxicity of the medications that we've prescribed when actually it's the medications, so to speak, that we haven't prescribed or the Friday night fraternity party and we're seeing them Monday morning after a little binge on the weekend. So if we're not prepared to bring these issues up and to let our patients know that what they do may affect their medical care, we can have some real therapeutic folly. And so I think these are issues that our patients need to know to talk to us about and about the next care team. And in talking about the next care team, have our patients who are going off to college identified someone who can care for their inflammatory bowel disease locally? I always think of it sort of as if you take an umbrella, it won't rain. If I have a specialist nearby, I'll probably do fine. And if I don't, that's when I'm going to have a flare or have an exacerbation of my disease. Along the lines of exacerbations of disease, we all know that one of the most common causes of a so-called flare or loss of remission in inflammatory bowel disease is a loss of adherence or compliance to the medical plan. And that's not always a conscious effort. Sometimes just getting into the swing of things, learning how to live on my own, getting busy with so many different things, I'll forget to take my medicines or I'll fall out of a pattern. And so a good routine and talking to our patients about setting up a good routine so that they can remember their medications is very important. For our patients on infusion therapy, I think we need to give them a hand to plan out, okay, your next infusion is going to be in 8 weeks. Is that going to be local at school or is that going to be here? And if it's going to be local at school, let's figure that out now and not 2 days before the date start being in a scramble to find a place to be infused. And I think also it's fine to let our patients know that having inflammatory bowel disease sometimes does give you small perks. Most colleges will make accommodations for dorm room or classroom placement or parking closer to the dorm. And if we bring up those issues, our patients will know to ask. I know, Anne, you also have been very involved, not just with accommodations, but other medical legal interactions for inflammatory bowel disease patients. Can you talk about some of those, especially for our patients who may be in the workforce?
One of the things that I like to think about is in terms of when they go to work, they frequently want to know when they could disclose to an employer about their condition. And one of the things I like to remind them is I don't think the interview is the appropriate place. You want to really get your foot in the door of a workplace and prove yourself as a worthy employee before you decide that you're going to go ahead and disclose things. That being said, I do think that some point early in the process you do need to disclose to your supervisor your chronic condition because that gives you some rights in terms of taking care of yourself but also comes with some responsibilities. One of the big things that a young person with a chronic illness like IBD needs to know about is the Family Medical Leave Act, which is a law that allows them to take up to 12 weeks of time off. It's frequently without pay, but at least your job will be held for you in your absence. And what is important for young people to remember in that is that it doesn't have to be a solid chunk of time of 12 weeks. It can be broken up into increments of time. So it's very flexible for those with flares or things that they need to take care of in terms of maintenance of their bodies and their disease process that can be done in small increments. But that's something you should work out with hopefully your supervisor at work, because if you can plan for certain things like your annual colonoscopy, maybe some other testing that takes a little more than, you know, a half hour in the lab, you can plan for and it shows your boss that you're really putting work as a priority. Additionally, I had started to talk about, too, about the type of job that fits you best physically. That's important to figure out because, again, if there are physical limitations to what you can do because of anemia and fatigue, joint pain, those are all things to consider in what job you choose to take on. Clearly something like maybe a firefighter or something, it may be too much. The other thing to remember is that insurance is very important and a primary care provider is very, very important. Frequently, the two go hand in hand, and then a lot of insurance plans will require you to have a primary care physician to provide the referrals for you to see your specialist. I encourage young people with chronic illnesses to seek a primary care provider who's based in internal medicine. And there are a growing body of professionals out there who do have some what they call MedPeds background, which means they are adult providers who've had some training in pediatrics to know about these sort of chronic diseases that start in childhood. The other thing to worry about it with insurance, or not to really worry about, but to consider, is the cost of medications. A lot of the biologic agents used with IBD control are prohibitively expensive without insurance plans. That being said, if you're a young person who's between jobs or doesn't have good insurance or has faced issues of that kind, a lot of the bigger drug companies that provide these biological agents have patient assistance programs, which I have actually used very effectively in getting some of our young people drugs at no cost for them for a period of time while they need it to get insurance in place.
Thank you, Anne. That's a very comprehensive summary. And I know that you work as a transition nurse or a nurse navigator in a transition program. So you have a lot of personal experience, and there's a very well-described literature on how to facilitate the transition process. In closing, do you have any tips, any pearls to give us as we help our patients transition?
I just encourage the patient to sort of set their life goals and to achieve them the best way they can. I have a lot of young people ask me, you know, should I go to a college closer to home or should I go someplace where maybe there's a clinic that specializes in IBD? I tend to think of you sort of living your life and then coping with the disease aspects of it as secondary to what your life goals are. So to me, I encourage you to sort of do what the best you can, achieve the most you want or not, depending on the kind of person you are, and then work out the arrangements around the disease. So picking your adult provider is really important to have somebody who, A, is clearly competent at taking care of the illness, but secondarily can help you adapt the treatment plan to your own limitations, whether it be you really don't have time to take pills three times a day or you prefer an injection as opposed to a lengthy infusion. So to me, that's just a teamwork between you and your new provider.
Thanks, Anne. I would certainly echo those thoughts. I always tell my patients that the reason we've worked so hard all these years is that they could live their life and to normalize their life, and being normal means this doesn't decide where you go to school or what job you get, but you need to work through it. And I always make sure after the patients meet their new adult provider that they have an appointment back to me, sort of a debriefing, if you will. Was this really a good match for you? Is this going to work? And are you really comfortable? And that way it really helps to be a transition and not a transfer. So I hope that our discussion today has been helpful as you transition your patients with inflammatory bowel disease and help them to navigate the waters of the transition process. I want to thank you, Anne. I think the discussion today has been really great.
Yeah, thank you, Joel. I've enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to this episode in the CME podcast series on improving the transition process for pediatric IBD patients. Go to pedibd.org to subscribe to receive future episodes. I'm Tony Ottley.